Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the ET Healing and Explorations in Consciousness show. Sorry we had a little confusion tonight with the show, but we're starting a few minutes late. Welcome. This is Jackie Salvetti and my co-host, Veronica Entwistle, mm-hmm. who has her own show on Tuesday afternoons at 4 p.m. called Radiance by Design. For those of you who didn't tune in last week, we began last week a process of really stirring up shame. There's a purpose for this, everyone. The goal here is in a couple of weeks, and I can't tell you exactly when, we will do a show where I'll be in full channel, and they're going to do a lifting of shame. And I can tell you that when, and they call it a sacred dispensation, it will be very powerful. I don't know if they'll do it over 1 week or 2 weeks. So I have to say that for those of you that listened last week, I don't know how many of you went into process with this, but I can tell you that they are really pushing this. And it has taken me into a huge process that I didn't anticipate. So I would like to kind of share my own process with you. Wonderful. They've been waking me up in the middle of the night, making me turn on programs because there's a piece here and a piece there that they felt was important to share. The title of tonight's show is Sex, Shame, and Religion. It's cellular. And Veronica, and for everyone listening, I can tell you that I have been purging since Tuesday night. I know it's cellular. So I'm going to share my own process with you, and I don't want to bore anyone, but I know that it's an important process, and it's, you know, some things I think a lot of people may or may not know. Probably most of you don't know. During my investigation of things that they wanted, you know, brought to the fore, and I'll share that with you after this story, it was something having to do with children that absolutely stirred up in me a piece that I knew about, that I thought I'd dealt with, and that I can tell you I hadn't. I grew up in 13 foster homes, and at about 11, I was living in West Hollywood with my mother at that point. I was actually living with her. I was beaten very, very badly, and the school was aware of me being locked in my room for weeks at a time and all kinds of things that were going on, and this was kind of the last straw. I came to school. I couldn't sit down. I couldn't lean. I couldn't do anything. And I was beaten very severely.
For any real reason?
So the school called the sheriff's department, and, of course, they stripped me, which was very lovely, and then took me to downtown L.A. and put me in a place called Lathrop Hall, which was on the backside of Juvenile Hall in downtown Los Angeles. I remained there for 2.5 months in an actual jail cell. So the concept of protective custody was, it just didn't register. But the things that I witnessed during that 2.5 months were so horrendous. And the abuses to children were beyond anything that I could imagine. There was one family of small children, Hispanic, whose mother didn't have food to feed them, and her husband had left her. She was an illegal alien and couldn't get aid, so she slashed their wrists. There were children in there who, of course, were experiencing all kinds of incest, and the varieties are so great that I can't begin to tell you. I felt very privileged compared to the other children. I realized that although what I had been through had been horrendous, it was nothing in comparison to what I saw in this place. And because I was educated and I helped teach school, I did the room searches because you couldn't have any sharp objects. Just even the process of being checked in,
you think that'll work?
Your trip, Veronica?
Yes?
I'm sorry, you were talking?
No, it's okay, go ahead.
Over that 2.5 months, we weren't allowed to shave, of course. We weren't allowed to use any sharp objects. It was just a complete stripping of all forms of dignity. The overcrowded conditions were such that you slept on the floor on a pea-stained mattress, the stench, unbelievable. I worked in the kitchen for a while, and the food would come over in open containers full of bugs. You had a treat of cookies at night, and when you'd break them open, the bugs would run out of the cookies. I was in fear for my life the whole time I was in there, which I think is interesting because other children, several of them, that I was privileged or a goody-goody, they put out word that I was going to be killed. And I also did the counting out of the silverware and everything during meals. So I feared for my life all the time. They tried to gang rape me and on and on and on.
And no one defended you?
No. No. Well, they finally, one of the people watching over the room finally saw everybody gathered around, and I was on the floor. And, at any rate, it was, I gained 60 pounds in 2.5 months. And, you know, I can't say it was the food because nobody else did, but it was protection. So in watching this program that we'll tell you about in a little while, about children, and it triggered all of that in me. I taught a lot of the children how to pray and, you know, did all I could to minister this to them because so many of them were afraid. They were angry. They were enraged. You know, there were children in there, 13-year-old lesbians, and all kinds. You know, again, this is not to say anything bad against anyone, but these children, many of them had been having sex against their wishes from the time they were very small. And there was a place that they would take you if you misbehaved. They would literally drag you off over to the juvenile hall side, where they had what they called X, which was a padded cell. I, thank God, never had to go there. But the impact of all of this, how horrendous it was, turned into shame, and I didn't realize it. And it was so deep and so horrendous that it had a tremendous impact on me, and it triggered this week not only that shame, but also all of the sexual abuse that I had experienced from foster families and from my mother's boyfriends and so on. And so I had a healing session with someone else because I can't do myself. I get on the table every day and they do all kind of energy work on me and, you know, my blood, my organs and all of that. But the deep emotional healing, and I knew they were preparing me for it. I could feel them working in my brain, and I could feel this building in my stomach. And so Tuesday night, by the time I got ready to have a session, I literally, my legs were cramping. And it felt like I was going to give birth to Rosemary's baby. It was so unbelievably painful, physically painful. And the reason I'm sharing this with all of you is not, please do understand that I'm not saying for me. I'm sharing with you the fact that the intention, which is to stir it up in everyone so that we can lift it. We all carry shame. Everybody. We're a shame-based race. Now, and I am still in process. I will, absolutely tell you that. I'm still purging. I'm still going through horrendous symptoms. especially where I had parked all my sorrow and pain as a child went into my left kidney, and I had a, the kidney was dying at 20, and they had to take out a huge tumor and so on. So, of course, all that pain is acting up in there. And this is what we do with shame, if we stuff it into our body.
In our file folder.
I'm sorry?
In our file folders.
Well,
really.
Yeah, in our but it also, regardless of how much I had processed through all of this,
mm-hmm.
what I realized is that no matter how much healing you've had, until there is real intercession, okay, until you can get to the shame and it can be lifted, until it can be lifted out of the organs especially, we end up with disease.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell you I'm going to clarify this also, just so people understand. We're never given more than we can handle, and I certainly am a great proponent of that. And, you know, I'm lucky I didn't have a psychotic break, I think I'm, because that story, of course, goes on where they finally took me away from, actually my mother voluntarily gave me up because she got angry, and gave me to my father knowing that he was dead. I did not know that. And they put me in a temporary foster home finally, and I was waiting to go live with my father, which was the dream of my life. And they came out, and I thought they were coming to get me. I was all packed and ready to go, and came out and told me that he was dead. So, and that, you know, that part, I went into shock. I really remember nothing after that for, I don't know, probably months.
How old were you?
11 and a half, maybe just turned 12 at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I really want to talk about tonight about religion, which it sounds like a distant term from all this, but it's not. I'm seeing this in sessions every day. And it's rage at men, rage at God, rage at religion. And so many of you listening took on an awful lot in this lifetime, and you did it purposefully. I did as well. And the reason that you volunteered to do that is because you knew that in your healing, you could help have greater impact on the planet to lift this out of the mass consciousness. And I say this to everyone that's listening tonight, because at some level, everyone has had sorrow, shame, pain. I can go on and on and on. And
but it's in us as a species, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
It's in us as a species.
Oh, absolutely. And it's cellular. We carry the sum total of all experience on the planet. It's sitting in the mass consciousness, and we carry it at a cellular level.
Right.
So what I'm seeing it with people who are taking on as imprints, these very archetypal lifetimes, and I'm always fascinated. You know, Joan of Arc has come up three times this week. Again, absolute betrayal by God, also martyred. And now there were wonderful, powerful things about her as an archetype. You know, she was courageous and she had many wonderful things, but unfortunately she became martyred.
Right.
But people who took on these imprints, you know, are working at the betrayal of the shame around God. Mm. And I was blessed, and I want to say this again for those that are listening, I knew I was being prepared for something from the time I was a little tiny girl. I had no idea what it was, but I accepted everything that happened to me as part of that preparation. That was the great gift I was given.
But you didn't martyr. That's just interesting, hey?
No. I wouldn't say to you that I've never done martyr. I did martyr in a relationship once to the point where I told my son just to put a great big M on my coffin when I died.
But isn't it interesting that martyr used to be the way of coping with that power struggle between authority, didn't it?
Well, yes, and I think we're seeing our young people act it out. These young people are coming in anti-authority.
Right.
Again, that pendulum swing, Veronica.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Now, I'm going to talk about, this is how the dark side of this plays out. And some of these things I talk about tonight can be disturbing to people, but there's a reason for it. They've made certain that I see it. Now, part of this was for me, no question about it. Many people listening tonight have either experienced incest in some fashion, sexual abuse in some fashion. And certainly this is not a blanket statement. Some of you may, you know, be in same-sex relationships. And again, you know, we're in the United States. You know, we come out of Puritan stock,
right?
We're loaded with shame. And so there was a program, and maybe some of you saw it. I was asleep. They woke me up to watch it. And it was called The Children of God, the Family. This is the story of the founder is David Berg. Now, this group still exists today, although they've changed their name and they claim no longer to endorse pedophilia. The story came to the media because, and I'll explain this, but the whole theory of this, and they called it, it's a Christian organization from Mexico to Manila, all over the world. They had a free love theology. And the children were groomed from the time they were born to participate in group sex with the adults. And they called it leading these people to Jesus. They called them the children God's whores or hookers for Jesus. Now, I want you to know, this is the twist, okay? The way this shame plays out in the extreme, okay? In the extreme. There was a young man who was kind of groomed as the heir apparent. And from the time he was a small child, he had to have sex with the founder. And in addition to other select adults, as did his future wife. It came to the media because before killing himself as an adult, he video recorded his story.
Oh, my.
And his shame. And what it had done to him, how it had destroyed his life. Now, this was not an easy story to watch. This is the one that really triggered me. And they believed that incest was virtuous. And again, taking religion and sex to the extreme. Now,
what was the inspiration in the founder's brain?
He believed himself to be Moses, and he had many other things. You can go online. It's now called the Family International. They've changed the name. The founder died in 94. He saw himself as a messianic leader and with sole authority. And it was a compelling story. It was also a heartbreaking story.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly it triggered in me what I saw with these children and how helpless I felt when I was institutionalized to change their lives. I could only do so much. And I didn't realize how deep that imprint was. Now, what it did to me, of course, and I want to say this, if we haven't lifted and healed the shame, we're going to continue to attract people who will be abusive in some way, be it either through abandonment or a twist in the sexuality, control through sexuality. But what we do is attract what's familiar. For me, love was pain. I attracted people into my life who ended up being very painful for me.
Mm-hmm. Or we could be perpetrators by the same token, couldn't we?
Yes, absolutely. Now, you know, again, I know that I'm a very strong person, and I did not experience, you know, a psychotic break, and I didn't experience, I mean, because certainly all the stories after that were equally awful, but, you know. But it was in preparation for this work. My agreement was coming in that I wanted to experience everything so that I would have compassion for everyone and understanding. Living in 13 foster homes, every home I went into, I would be dropped off at a stranger's home, not knowing if I would ever see my mother again because there'd be no real dialogue. And I would have to adapt into that family in a moment and trying to find a way to be okay to survive in a family environment that I was totally foreign to me.
Sets up a lot of trust issues maybe, huh?
Oh, I think it brought up thank heaven, I had this really strong relationship with what I called Mother, Father, God. That was my source.
Right.
That was my source. And I studied every religion, and, I'm a different, you know, kind of a different bear, but...
wait a minute. Isn't there a drive in your soul journey to figure out what it all is anyway?
Absolutely. Well, it was for me, yes.
Yeah, and that can't be eclipsed. Usually it can't be eclipsed by these things that happen, can it?
No, evidently it never was.
I don't think so. I think the journey is so powerful, isn't it?
Well, and I'm going to go back to... just before they took me away from my mother, I had enrolled myself in Catholic school. And this is kind of an interesting story, but it's kind of a lead-up because it certainly anchored in just before this extreme experience. So it tied it together. A child had fallen at school, and I was in the classroom. I took the child in to, you know, put a Band-Aid on her knee and whatever. And one of the nuns came in, and I was trying to teach her how to heal herself. And the nun went sideways.
You heretic.
And, of course, I got by what authority. And I at any rate, I then, silly person that I was, because I was always exploring religion and doctrines and so on and so forth, and I had... happened to be somewhere and they had a King James version of the Bible open, and I started to read, and it was different, of course, with the Catholic version, and it didn't have this heavy original sin context to it. So I questioned the nun again, and I said, well, you know, I read this King James version of the Bible and there's nothing in there about original sin. And so that happened to be on a Friday, which is the day you go to confession. And so they march all the classes over there, and you know, the boys are on one side, the girls are on the other, and I happened to be on the side with the Monsignor, and the nun came up, my nun, and whose name I don't remember at all, and said, no, you don't want to go in there. You want to come over here? And I said, no, that's where all the boys are. It would call attention to me. And she had already told me that I had to go in and confess that I was trying to heal this child or teach them how to heal themselves, and that I questioned original sin. So my turn came, I went up to get to the confessional, and the Monsignor went absolutely nuts and started screaming at the top of his lungs. And he didn't stop. And finally they took all the classes back, and I was still there. When I got out, I was so shaken. The nun
screaming, Jackie?
What?
What was he screaming?
Basically that I either become a Catholic or I become something else, and if I'm not going to be a Catholic, get the hell out of his confessional, and who do I think I am, and by what right do I have reading another Bible? And I don't know. After a while, it was rhetoric to me.
Yeah.
And so then the nun came to get me and took me over to the priest to try to kind of patch things up. And who talked more kindly to me. I was in confession for 3 hours total.
Oh, my.
And I went home with burns down my face. I never went back. That was it. And
where did you go? Different school?
I went back to public school, and, yes. So the long and short of this was that, again, the guilt and the shame and the... you know, I was a sinner, I was going to hell, I was going to burn in hell. I mean, they came at me from every direction.
Hmm.
So, you know, I'm going to segue from this into another.
Well, just tell me, did you believe in hell at that point in your life, at like 12? Were you 12?
I would have been 11, Veronica.
So did you even believe it when they told you about hell?
I just couldn't conceive of it, no.
Yeah, okay.
I couldn't conceive of original sin in a child going to limbo any more than I could conceive of of anyone being sent into the fires of hell. It made absolutely no sense to me. Because to me, God was love. I could not put that together.
Mm.
So, and of course, my mother had become a Christian Scientist, so I was reading Science of Mind, I think that's what it was, Science and Health, or whatever it was called. And so there were a lot of new principles, you know, and
the secret. You were into the secret, girl.
Yes, I was. It was really opening me up. And so, you know, of course, I continued to study because I've always been this way. I was very blessed in terms of living with all these different families and almost all of them different religions. So I want to move forward a little bit, Veronica, and I want to talk
Please.
About the burning years and,
yeah.
and talk about this big chasm that we carry, and this is cellular, folks. This is cellular. The burning years in Europe were, the majority of them, from the 15th to the 17th century. They bled a little bit before and a little bit after.
Wait a sec. What you're saying is that we all hold the memories that you're bringing up,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And this stuff is deep. It's very deep. Now, during this time that they called the burning years, women who practiced, and this goes to doctors as well, this is why it's so fascinating to me. Women who practiced herbology and midwives and so on, the doctors didn't like them interfering. The doctors wanted soul control.
That soul spelled with a U?
Yeah, no. But a very good play on words, Veronica. So they got together with the Catholic Church. I'm going to know. This is a short version, but it'll do it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they turned these people in as witches, and they got, and the church, the Catholic Church, wrote a confession. And the essence of the confession was that they admitted that they had had sex with the devil.
They had sex with who?
The devil.
Oh, my gosh.
So what they did, now, this is where the expression, the third time's a charm, actually came from. Now, there were 5 million women, some men, primarily women, killed during this time in this way. They were tortured, and I mean tortured. The women, all of their body hair was shaved from them, including on their head.
Hmm.
Because
what was the time period? How long a period was this?
About 200 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Now,
I haven't heard of this.
And a lot of people have not, but I guarantee you that it is cellular. It will touch the rage in women because there is something here. It's been written about. It was written about in, I believe, the Da Vinci Code even referred to it.
Hmm.
Okay? During this time, and there's only one letter that exists from that time today, from one woman, out of all the women that were killed.
Hmm.
They would be displayed in the town square in a cage, naked with no hair on their bodies. And those that held court over them were told never to look at them. Okay? Because they considered them dangerous, that the power was in their hair and in their eyes.
Oh, my.
And then they were tortured. And they always knew at the third torture they would sign the confession and then be killed.
Oh, my gosh. And then where did they go when they signed the confession?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't there. But as I understand, they were probably burned. But they had been tortured, most of them, so brutally at that point that I don't think it took much to take them over the top.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is a video, if anybody can handle it. It was a goddess series that was run, and I saw this video probably 12 years ago. And the video was called The Burning Years.
Hmm.
And I watched it with a good friend of mine in New York, and I can tell you that by the end of the video, I could have peeled the paint off the walls with my fingernails. I was so enraged.
Wow.
And it took us both 24 hours before we weren't biting each other's heads off. And it just brought up huge rage. It's cellular.
Mm-hmm.
These kinds of things. Now, the doctors and a lot of, you know, this is where, again, these are God projections. Okay? Priests, doctors, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And Christianity. Now, if we go to the Crusades, all the women that were raped and murdered during the Crusades as they came in to convert people to Christianity was horrendous.
In the name of Christ.
In the name of Christ. In the name of Christ.
Isn't that stunning? I mean,
now, the women that I'm seeing today, powerful, successful, brilliant, have studied for 20, 30 years on their spirituality diligently. This is not, you know, once a week. These are people that eat, sleep, live, and breathe it.
Right.
And they're finding this rage coming up, and it's surfacing, folks, because it's in us. The shame and the rage and the stripping of dignity. And I really want to focus on this, the stripping of dignity, for a moment, because everyone listening tonight has had their dignity stripped somewhere. Mom and dad, brothers, sisters, boyfriends, girlfriends, somewhere. Somewhere your dignity was stripped. And without dignity, you have no protection.
Right.
You're naked. And that's when these things can really strip at the soul, at the very level of soul. And I'm really hoping they do the lifting of shame soon, because I have to tell you, these shows are really tough on me right now.
So you're saying, it's almost to me like there's a layer of shame that runs through our consciousness as a species.
Yes.
And it's that collective response to this inhumanity and this...
Yes. And it can be triggered, in addition to that, by personal experience.
Right.
Tapping into that layer through personal experience can be so disturbing that it can affect the psyche.
Right.
Now, I've worked with women who truly did not understand why they were being troubled by certain things. And as we've gone back through their history, and this part I do in channel, this is, you know, and their higher selves, we ask their higher selves to bring up images of experiences beginning in childhood, the first memories that were laden with shame. And I have to tell you that people don't realize when we do this experience how deep it is. And literally, it's like they reach right through the phone lines and lift it out. But it's big.
Hmm.
And people, I've had people say to me, I've been doing this stuff for 20 years. I've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars. I don't understand how this can still be there. And I want to say to everyone, the reason it's still there is because you took it on in such big ways. You're heroes, all of you. All of you. You're heroes. I mean, I've never seen more women celibate. And if you think about this, Veronica, all the women that today are choosing to be on their own, have chosen not to have partners, have even decided to, you know, for whatever reason, to become celibate. I believe that as a we are shifting this in a very big way. It's not that I'm condoning celibacy, and somebody called me last week's show and said, well, all you did was talk about masturbation. And I said, no, that wasn't the premise of the show. It was about getting rid of the shame around sexuality.
Oh, and there's a choice in having our power, whereas with shame, there was no choice. It was a holding back of self that was relied on.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the twist that happens in relationships, especially now,
mm-hmm.
because people are, and I'm seeing these big relationships coming on board right now,
mm-hmm.
where they are archetypal. We have the high priestess and the emperor coming together, standing in their own power.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still that twist, all right? There's still that twist because as that archetype, okay, they still represent and can be projections of God.
Hmm.
And we do this. This is the way it works. We project because we feel separate as a third-dimensional being. We project God onto men and Goddess onto women, and then we get betrayed and abandoned and hurt and beat and whatever, okay, and transfer that anger and rage, okay,
mm-hmm.
to men as species, to women as a species, to God. Or Goddess.
Hmm.
And it continues to project out onto doctors and the church, whichever church that might be. Again, all the secrets that have been controlled by religion. Look at the oppression. You can't have sex, no premarital sex, no this, no that. It's a sin. It's a sin. It's a sin. You have to be venerated. You have to be this. You have to be that.
So it's kind of implying that without a lot of clearing. Now, isn't it Lazarus that says you can't actually clear shame?
It has to be lifted.
It has to be lifted.
It has to be lifted. What happens, the reason they have me doing these shows or us doing these shows, Veronica,
mm-hmm.
is to trigger some of that so that you can recognize where it's sitting. In your life,
right?
In your psyche. Now, Lazarus, and I want to say this to everyone listening, there are 4 wonderful tapes by Lazarus, and they do lifting. I recommend these to everyone.
Hmm.
If you go on to Lazarus.com, LazarIS.com, and once you sign in, I have you do a little sign-in thing, search tapes, go lifting shame or ending shame. There
ending
are 4
shame,
tapes.
Yeah.
Shame and infancy, because it begins even in the womb. Psychic contracts of pain, adolescent shame, and adult shame. They're brilliant tools for everyone. For everyone. I can't recommend them enough. And yeah, I recommend them during sessions, or they do. You know, it depends on what the situation is.
So whilst you're talking, I notice that I go through an awful lot of, memory tensions and so on in my own body and my stomach, which I told you, I think yesterday when we were chatting about shame, I felt like vomiting when we were talking about the women, the burning women.
Yes, exactly.
And my body just pulses, and that's what we're talking about, isn't it?
That is what we're talking about, and some of you may feel it, and some of you may not. The reason this is so powerful is that we are moving to our freedom here. We are shifting the mass consciousness, and for those of you who've taken on a lot in this lifetime, as I said, you're a damn hero. Don't underestimate. And, you know, in terms of there, you know, and I want to say this about the Lazarus tapes. On the 4th side of the tape, Lazarus gives a lot of other ways, other things that you can do, other processes to get to it. And I know people who've worked with it and worked with it and worked with it and worked with it and still had shame.
Tell me this, if you're in a companionship, if you're in a couple, if you're in with either people or a partner, can you do it together? Wouldn't that be ideal?
You know, I can't even comment on that, Veronica, because with the human psyche the way it is, and when you're doing it with a couple, unless you have an extraordinary relationship.
Yes, I think so. Thanks.
Okay, which you do.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people have pieces of themselves that are hidden that they don't share with anyone.
Right.
And with this shame, okay, and I really want to say this, in going through what I went through this week, I had to go back with my little girl, who is, I'll say this forever, she's my hero.
Hmm.
The fact that she survived all she survived, she is my hero. Total faith. This girl had total faith. Nothing shook her, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Her faith was unshakable no matter what happened. And I spent a lifetime trying to get back to that unshakable faith, which is where I am today.
Mm.
But she had a resolve that was amazing to me. And by lifting this shame and moving this shame, my relationship with her, and I believe everybody should have a great relationship with your child and adolescent folks so they don't run your life.
The tantrums. Mm-hmm.
Because the shame-based child in you, and this is not a theoretical, your child and your adolescent exist in time and space because there really is nothing but one now moment experienced from different perspectives.
Hmm.
Okay? And this is where, if you haven't done work with your child and an adolescent, if you're not checking in with them, I was talking to a woman the other day who was going through some stuff, and I said, so what did your child have to say? And she said she wanted to get rid of all men on the planet.
No. That's not so practical.
So, this is, in my own experience, Veronica, and people know
okay.
me as being a very strong person, and I am, I would go into relationship and totally give myself away. Earning love. Shame-based, without even understanding why. Did not, and it was so, again, you know, it goes back to all the foster homes and all the shame around that, but
is it shame or is it just yearning to be connection?
Oh, definitely yearning to be connected, but not believing that I could be my own person and be loved.
Right.
So, you know, and I'll just give you an aside, that after I went through this session on Tuesday night, I realized how much I had puffed up as a person to protect myself. And it's not only weight, but it's energy. And literally went through this whole thing where I became so strong that men wouldn't, you know, I had this plexiglass shield that come up against it and kind of bounce off.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
was that because of a projection of authority and the lack of protection you'd ever had? Or just men?
I think that I got so clear because I died after my last relationship that I was dead for 2.5 hours. I literally knew that if I had any more pain, I was going to die.
Right.
I would never make it. I had no place. My container was full.
Hmm.
And my container, and I spent 9 months in meditation, doing work, nothing but, after I died. And it took me 3 years to kind of come back, which I've said before, but yeah, I want to go a little further with this also in terms of, and this may not be true for everybody, certainly, but what I got clarity about, and I did a Debbie Ford workshop called The Dark Side of the Light Chasers, and that's also another excellent book that I would recommend.
Mm-hmm.
Debbie is brilliant at her shadow work. And she's deadly, but she's good. And what it triggered in me when I was there during the workshop was the rage I had at all of the men that had done totally inappropriate things to me, and I felt shame around it because I didn't know what I was doing to bring it on, bring it to me. Now, when I had this experience the other night, it was perfectly clear to both myself and the healer I was working with that because this, all the abuse was so deeply imprinted, not only mine, but all these children I was incarcerated with, that I became an attractor, literally a magnet for those experiences. It was so deeply imprinted in me.
Hmm.
And so I continued through adulthood to have these experiences until I finally became so flamboyant. I went to the other extreme. I became so flamboyant that it was, I was living in, you know, in Ogden, Utah. I became so flamboyant that it was almost kind of a joke to me. If you were smart, you'd figure it out, and if not, you know, you wouldn't go near it because I was the antithesis of what you'd expect in Ogden, Utah. I had, you know, rose-colored Lincoln, all the clothes that matched. You know, I wore those tall platform shoes. I had a cigarette holder. I was out there.
And were you celibate at that point?
No, I was married.
Oh, okay.
And, I mean, I would have experiences where I had one where a man came to one of my open houses. I was in real estate. Went upstairs and got naked and wouldn't leave the house. And he was a neighbor. But you see, it was my stuff. It was energetically I was attracting these experiences without being consciously aware, not knowing how. So, of course, I went to shame. Something's wrong with me. I'm flawed. I'm flawed.
How much of it is cellular in a response to experiences and a soul thing?
I don't know if I'd go so much to soul. I would say, again, if we take on certain imprints of lifetimes, which we know that happens, and especially since I had 3 Joan of Arcs in 1 week.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean you have 3 Joan of Arcs? People who are...
who literally carry the imprint of the lifetime of Joan of Arc.
Hmm.
And you can't tell if it's an actual lifetime that they lived or not. It's exactly the same because you take on all the memories and the emotions, everything with it.
So that's called an imprint, and we all have those?
Absolutely. It's like prior to being born. Think of it as a giant Rolodex.
Right. Well, I was thinking of a holographic thing that gets flung around and many get attracted to it.
No, it's more purposeful than that.
Hmm.
If you're coming in to work on specific energies, and let's say specifically this lifetime,
mm-hmm.
because this is the big one. This is the one where we make the shift into higher dimensions and frequencies where... and so does Earth. And again, these are people, many of them, you know, I've worked with some that, you know, think they've had a lot of human lifetimes, and I know doggone well that they haven't, but they carry the imprint. If you have somebody who's never had a lifetime on Earth, in order to survive here, they have to take on a mix of lifetimes, okay?
So how do we know? How do we know for ourselves?
You don't.
Oh.
That's the beauty of it.
Hmm.
In other words, first of all, it's not really important whether you really lived it or not, is it?
Mm-hmm. Not really, I guess if you're in the now.
It's not important at all. What's important is that you are working with those imprints, those archetypal imprints that are important. And so I look at it as every lifetime that has big flags to it for you, emotional flags, okay,
mm-hmm.
is part of a matrix of things that you're working with in this lifetime. Very purposeful.
Mm-hmm.
Anger at God, Joan of Arc. It's just kind of a given. The ultimate betrayal.
Mm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, there's all kinds of varieties of others, certainly. But so many came in this lifetime specifically, and Lazarus talks about this as well, having been in Atlantis during one of the three destructions, determined that it wasn't going to happen again.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I see in my work people who took on amazing matrices, a little different here, a little different there. Each one has their own flavor. But I could group them over here, anger and betrayal by God and men, you know, over here, you know, and they have very exaggerated lifetimes.
Hmm.
Betrayal by mom, dad, you know, abandonment emotionally, physically, rejection from the time they're born with no sound reason for it, other than a contract.
Other than what?
A contract.
Hmm.
Okay? And the agreements are so broad. You know, we're going to come in, like my own mother is a perfect case in point. She did brutality. She, I mean, this is Joan Crawford of the flesh. She didn't look like her. Beautiful woman. And, but she played such an amazing role for me right to her death. And I send her gratitude every day because I recognize it was a horrible role to have to play. That she had to love me tremendously to agree to come in and play that role.
Does that so it's a little difficult for people to be conscious of that in the moment, isn't it?
Well, okay, Veronica, and here's what I'm going to say. When you can look at all life experience with no buzz, when you absolutely look at everything that happened to you without feeling like a victim, when you reach a point where you can thank every perpetrator, you're there.
Hmm.
Now, this is why I was so shocked at how much shame was in me, and it shouldn't have surprised me. But, I mean, I have come to peace with, you know, all of it. You know, I've gone through every single piece, by piece, plus I have the luxury of this work. And my intention in every session is to heal through the session as, I'm, you know, we're working on someone else.
Hmm, that's wonderful, yes. Yeah. I do that as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, every time you talk to someone, and, you know, this is, you are me, I am you. All the people listening, there is a piece of me in all of you and a piece of you in me. It is impossible for us to be separated. This goes back to quantum physics. What's created together is forever entangled. And it challenges us because when we see perpetrators like this man, David Burke,
mm-hmm.
to look at him and bless him anyway
mm-hmm.
is one of the toughest challenges we have.
Sure is.
But ultimately, that's where we have to go. Doesn't mean we don't have discernment. I wouldn't want to hang out with him. I'd strangle him. He's already dead. Thank you.
But actually, to drop in and out of the shoes of others is still pretty crucial. Huh?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Well, to go into, I just think of it as going in and out of people's shoes. Just understand where they're at.
Well, we're drawing to a close here in a few minutes, Veronica. But, you know, Lazarus has said this as well, that people seek the light through the dark. And Alexis made a very interesting, another wonderful being, made an interesting observation once about someone that I had a relationship with. That, and she said, this lifetime he chose to experience himself as far as separate from God as it possibly could be.
Hmm.
Okay? That was his intent. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And somehow it kind of took the whole buzz off of it. It was just like, oh, yeah, okay. I got it.
Hmm.
And perhaps we've had lifetimes doing exactly the same thing.
Or have the imprints of that, which we can experience.
Exactly.
In the now.
Now, Veronica, I want you to give people your website and the name of your radio show and time.
Yeah, my website is www.veronicaentwistle.com. My website is about to get a whole new facelift, so over the next month it should change. And email me at veronicaentwistle.com or veronica@veronicaentwistle.com, and we'll talk about Jackie's show.
All right.
And my own on Tuesdays at 4 p.m.
There you go, on BBS Radio. Again, next week. I don't know what's in store, folks. I promise you we're going to do the lifting. It's not yet. I think next week we're probably going to talk about body image, because I think it's a really big deal, and some other things. Again, I'm never sure, because they start lining things up for me very quickly.
Jackie, can we recommend a kind of a process or a tool or breathing exercises or something that people can do? Because I know that you mobilize the shame in a lot of people.
Yes, and I would say when you go to bed tonight, ask your higher self to lift, to keep you as comfortable as possible through this process. They're happy to do that.
Thank you.
And I send my love to everyone who's listening tonight. Website, ethealing.com. Thank you all for walking through this with us. And remember, what doesn't kill you will make you stronger.
Good night, everyone. Thanks a lot, Jackie. Good night, everyone.